Vatehe Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 41 and 42. Esha Brahmanya Devasya Krishnasya cha Mahatmana Avatara Kata Punya Vidoya Tradi Daityayo Esha Brahmanya Devasya Krishnasya cha Mahatmana Avatara Kata Punya Vidoya Tradi Daityayo Esha Brahmanya Devasya Krishnasya cha Mahatmana Avatara Kata Punya Vidoya Tradi Daityayo Vaishnavis. Esha, all this, Brahmanya Devasya, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped by all Brahmanas, Krishnasya, of Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Cha, also, Mahatmana, the Super Soul, Avatara Kata, narrations about his incarnations, Punya, pious, purifying, Vada, killing, Yatra, wherein, Adi, in the beginning of the millennium, Daityayo, of the demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Text 41. Everything you asked me about Shishupal and others, everything you asked about how Shishupal and others attained salvation, although they were inimical, has now been explained to you by me. Text 42. In this narration about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, various expansions or incarnations of the Lord have been described, and the killing of the two demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, has also been described. Purport. Avatars, or incarnations, are expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Govinda. Advaitam Achutam Anadam Anantarupam Ajam Padana Purusham Navayovinam Cha Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, who is the original person, non-dual, infallible, and without beginning. Although he expands into unlimited forms, he is still the original. And although he is the oldest person, he always appears as a fresh youth. Such eternal, blissful, and all-knowing forms of the Lord cannot be understood by the academic wisdom of the Vedas, but they are always manifest to pure, unalloyed devotees. Brahma Samhita 5:33. The Brahma Samhita describes the avatars. Indeed, all the avatars are described in the authentic scriptures. No one can become an avatar or incarnation, although this has become fashionable in the age of Kali. The avatars are described in the authentic scriptures, shastras, and therefore, before one risks accepting a pretender as an avatar, one should refer to the shastras. The shastras say everywhere that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and that he has innumerable avatars or incarnations. Elsewhere in the Brahma Samhita, it is said, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan, Rama, Nisringha, Varaha, and many others are consecutive expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After Krishna comes Balaram, and after Balaram is Sankarshan, then Aniruddha, Pradumna, Narayan, and then the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu. All of them are avatars. One must hear about the avatars. Narrations about such avatars are called avatar katha, the narrations of Krishna's expansions. Hearing and chanting these narrations is completely pious. Shinvatam sakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana. One who hears and chants can become punya, purified of material contamination. Whenever there are references to the avatars, religious principles are established and demons who are against Krishna are killed. The Krishna conscious movement is spreading all over the world with two aims: to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to kill all the pretenders who falsely present themselves as avatars. The preachers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement must carry this conviction very carefully within their hearts and kill the demons who in many tactful ways vilify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. If we take shelter of Nrisimhadev and Prahlad Maharaj, it will be easier to kill the demons who are against Krishna and to thus reestablish Krishna's supremacy. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the original Lord. Prahlad Maharaj is our guru, and Krishna is our worshipful God. As advised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bij. If we can be successful in getting the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, and also that of Nrisimhadev, then our Krishna consciousness movement will be extremely successful. The demon Hiranyakashipu had so many ways to try to become God himself. But although Prahlad Maharaj was chastised and threatened in many ways, he rigidly refused to accept his powerful demoniac father as God. Following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, we should reject all the rascals who pretend to be God. We must accept Krishna and his incarnations, and no one else. Om Bhagana Chimadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. We are getting the wrap up now to the Leela of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisimhadev. And we should understand that there have been some issues that Prichit Maharaj wanted resolved. These issues began the seventh canto. The issues are about whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impartial. Samap Priya Sahid Brahman Bhutanam Bhagavan Swayam. This is the first question posed at the beginning. Verse number one of the seventh canto. Let's look at the facts. We understand Samapriya Sahid Brahman. Pritchett's talking to the Brahmana, Shukadev Goswami, described as the eye of the world. We all know that the Supreme Personality Godhead is equal, Samapriya. He's the well-wisher of everyone. And Sahid, he's everyone's best friend. Of all living entities. Then tell me, how can it be that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is partial? We just heard in the sixth canto that the Supreme Personality of Godhead conspired to do away with the enemies of Indra. He evidently took the side of the demigods in opposition to the demons. So what is this? Another angle of this question is, why should the Supreme Personality of Godhead get involved in this world? What is all this talk, in other words, about a proactive Bhagavan? What is he doing meddling in our affairs according to his own vision? What about our vision? This is the same problem people have with Bhagavad Gita. Why is this partiality shown by Krishna by his getting involved in a battle and backing the Pandavas? And of course, a further extension of this perplexity is, isn't God the supreme pacifist? Shouldn't God be nonviolent? So what is he doing? Number one, in the sixth canto, he's siding with the demigods against the demons. And then you see in the battle of Kurukshetra, he's manipulating, guiding Arjuna. Arjuna doesn't want to fight, and Krishna urges him onward. So what kind of Bhagavan is this? People actually feel uncomfortable with knowing that there is a supreme personality of Godhead who calls the shots. They want a kind of God who comes around when it's time to give material benefits according to our perception and who disappears for our sense gratification. When it's time for our sense gratification, he's gone. When we need help, he's here. So, it's not always that people can appreciate these points. And sometimes they react very strongly. Srila Prabhupada's first program, actually the first devotee program that done at Stanford University here in California. When Srila Prabhupada first established, he and the devotees established the center in Haight-Ashbury. So they did a program at Stanford. And the students began by chanting wildly. They were just chanting out of their minds, literally. Chanting at the top of their lungs and dancing. That's how the program started. So then, Prabhupada gave his lecture and asked for questions. Someone raise your hand. What if the government sends you to war? What about that? And so, devotees, Hayagriva Prabhu were there. They braced themselves because Prabhupada's not going to back down. they braced themselves for the blast because they knew this could explode. Because it was during the Vietnam War when all the young people, especially in Berkeley, were very vehemently opposed. So, the question, what if the government orders you to fight in a war? So Prabhupada answered, there's no harm if you go. The students were in shock. And then he explained that if the government orders you to go, it's not the same as if you murder someone. You are a soldier killing on the order of the government. So Prabhupada was explaining the intricacies of karma. And then he pointed out that although there's no harm because there's no harm to you because you're simply carrying out orders of your government, when we look at the whole situation, we see that guess who chooses the government? It's you. They didn't like that answer. People were yelling out, fascist, Nazi. They were yelling out to Prabhupada. Practically the whole room left. Then for the final kirtan, there was practically no one there chanting. So people have a little difficult time understanding how the Supreme Personality of God is equipoised and equal. Basically, they're saying we don't want the Supreme Personality of God to show up on his terms. If he's going to at all have something to do with the world, it should be on our terms. So therefore, Pritchard Maharaj wants to clear this up. Sum up Priya Suhid Brahman. We all know that the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. He's everyone's well-wisher. And he's everyone's best friend. But there seems to be some complexities here. So he's turning to Shukadeva Goswami, the eye of the world. Please, can you sort this out? And Pritchard Maharaj expresses that I have doubts. This question is troubling my mind. My mind is like the flame of a lamp disturbed by the blowing wind. Of course, Pritchard Maharaj is asking the question on behalf of the conditioned souls. He wants Shukadeva Goswami to clarify this. So Shukadeva Goswami explains that understanding Krishna's dealings in this world, avatar katha, avatar, as you know, means that which comes down into the material world. Understanding Krishna's activities, his Naralila, and all his other expansions and incarnations, understanding what they do, means you have to understand the body of the Supreme Personality of God. So you know that Krishna is not different from his body. And the same is true for all his avatars. That his body is all spiritual means there cannot be any partiality or favoritism as we know it in the material world. So we have to follow through. Advaitam, Achutam, Anadam, Anantarupam. If indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, is non-dual, infallible, and without beginning, if he has an all-spiritual form, then how can he have partiality, aversion, all those kind of things, which are characteristics of having a material body? We're so locked in the bodily conception of life that even when we think of God, we see the characteristics of a material body. So the Bhagavatam and the whole seventh canto is clearing that out. Aversion, attachment, friends, enemies, partiality. These are all the characteristics of a material body. But Krishna has no material body. He has no need to be averse to anyone. And because he's self-sufficient, he has no need for allies or friends in the material sense. So once you understand that, then only can you proceed to the next issue. In the course of Shukadeva Goswami answering Pritchett's question about the equality or the equal dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shukadeva describes a conversation between Narada and Yudhisthira. And so Yudhisthira Maharaj takes this whole topic of partiality, impartiality of Bhagavan a step further. He says, in other words, not only do we have this intricacy of the Lord seemingly siding with the demons, siding with the demigods against the demons, but what about this? Shishupal, a most ferocious demon, attains salvation. How do we understand that? In other words, the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very mystifying. They're totally beyond us. Is he partial? Is he impartial? And then hideous demons attain salvation. What is going on here? That's the seventh canto. What's going on here? What is the nature of Bhagavan? What's his program? What's his agenda? Why does he do what he does? So the whole seventh canto is about that. And of course, the climax of the seventh canto is Nrisimhadeva appearing to protect Prahlad and kill Hiranyakashipu. So you see remnants in text 41 of this issue that Yudhisthira Maharaj raised in Narada Muni. Dhammaghosa sutadinam hade satyam api drisham. Okay, Shishupal and also others, they attained salvation, although they were inimical. And specifically, what kind of salvation did they attain? Satyam, equal bodily features with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, now, it is said that it's been explained. What Yudhisthira asked about has now been explained. Narada Muni is saying, everything you asked me about, it's all been explained. How and why these demons got equal bodily features. And in today's verse that we're focusing upon, we are further presented with the necessity to hear about Krishna. Because it's only by hearing about Krishna and serving him that all these issues become clear. This is very important. You can't understand this subject matter with academic mentality. It's not possible. So this barrier confounds materialists, and sometimes they get enraged. What do you mean? I have to be part of your cult to understand what I'm reading. Get real. I've got intelligence. You got intelligence. I've studied Sanskrit. What's the big deal? You've got your opinion. I've got my opinion. Why do you say that I need to hear through parampara and perform devotional service, and then I can understand? Well, the proof is that without doing that, no one understands Krishna. They can't understand him. What's the first thing you read when you open the Krishna book? Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. In his preface or introduction, Srila Prabhupada says that anyone who actually knows what is God will accept Krishna. So that means if you are not educated, if you don't understand what is God, you're going to have a problem with Krishna. So therefore, in Prabhupada's purports, he's educating persons. This is God. And then it makes it so easy for you to accept Krishna. Anyone who actually knows what is God will accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. What is the use of someone just rejecting out of hand Krishna? Oh no, not Krishna. It can't be Krishna. Well, what knowledge do you have that you can reject Krishna? If you educate yourself and understand the science of God, if you actually understand it, you'll accept Krishna. And what's the second reason that Srila Prabhupada presents in that beginning of the Krishna book? He says, we accept Krishna because all the greatest personalities in the universe accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, we're not just doing our own thing. You know, I like the blue boy. Who do you like? We are following the most powerful personalities, the most authorized, the most educated, erudite personalities. That makes a huge difference. So therefore, in today's verse, the necessity of avatar katha is stressed. Understanding Krishna's relations with his devotees, hearing through disciplic succession, engaging your senses in devotional service, then everything becomes clear. So our process is repeated hearing. It's not like you go to some mundane institution. You learn something, you get your degree, that's it. Our process is constant hearing, repeated hearing. In other words, we have to get out of our system this notion that we're going to master the information in Bhagavatam. You can't materially master it. You simply hear it, and it becomes more and more clear the more you repeatedly hear. You can't lord it over Bhagavatam. You enter into Bhagavatam by rendering submissive devotional service. Vasudeva Kataruchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vipra. By rendering service to the Mahat, to the great soul, you are blessed with Vasudeva Kataruchi. The ruchi, the taste for hearing, talks about Vasudeva. It comes to you because of serving Krishna's great devotees. So there's no question of, now I've got it all understood, now I've got the subject mastered. No. That's why Lord Chaitanya instructs, before you are liberated, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and after you are liberated, go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're stuck. What we are doing now, we'll be eternally doing. So let's look at, again, this issue of Krishna's rewarding demons who are killed by him with salvation. It's a tricky point, as we explained yesterday, because naturally, with our material minds, we'll say, wait a minute, demons should be crushed, and we, the devotees, should be distinctly rewarded. Otherwise, what's the point in our being devotees? That's actually what we're saying underneath the law. If the demons get the same thing, then what am I doing this for? We calculate with our materialistic mentality. I'm serving Krishna to get that special reward. If the demons also get it, then hey, I should get out there and enjoy my senses. That's actually what we're saying. I'm taking all this, quote, trouble to serve Krishna just to get the same reward the demons get. How can he do that? So in this way, Krishna gets it from all sides. He gets criticized for being partial to Indra and the demigods, and he gets criticized for giving the same reward to the demons. So that's why, one of the reasons why you have this whole discussion in the seventh canto, where it's explained that any way you come in contact with Krishna, you'll always come out better, even if he kills you. That's how great Krishna is. You touch fire. So in some way, you're going to be burned. You'll be transformed, no matter what your motive is. Still, the question then is, well, shouldn't there be something special for the devotees? And even the greatest souls in Bhagavatam are kind of asking that question. I mean, okay, Krishna, okay. Shouldn't there at least be something distinctive for those who surrender to you in love? And this is a question that Brahma posed to Krishna in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, Brahma's prayers. So he said to Krishna, look, my mind is boggled, my mind is bewildered, trying to think, how could there be any other reward than you? You are the embodiment of all benedictions. There's no other reward than you. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura explains that Brahma is saying, It's not only me, but Shiva is wondering about this. The Kumaras are wondering about this. There's no other reward than you. Now, why are they saying that? Lord Brahma goes on to explain. You gave yourself to Putana and her family members. Even though she disguised herself as a devotee and came to kill you, you gave yourself to her. So you've given yourself. And remember, there's no other reward than you. Therefore, what is left for the Brijbasis? There's no other reward in existence than you. But you gave yourself to Putana and her family members. Who were her family members? Bakasura, who was the other one? She had two brothers, didn't she? Agasura, yes, yes. So you gave yourself to them. And there's no other reward than you. So what about the Brijbasis who have sacrificed everything for you? Families, homes, wealth, their very life and soul they've given to you. What's left for them? There's nothing else to have than you. There's no greater reward. So how are you going to treat them special, in other words? What do you have in reserve that you can give to them? You don't have anything because there's no other reward than you. So how are we going to solve this problem? Shiva's wondering. The Kumaras are wondering. What's going on here? So Brahma confesses, I'm totally bewildered. So then the Acharyas explain that Brahma and Krishna had a kind of a dialogue. And Krishna explained to him, I already knew in advance about the extraordinary devotion of the residents of Vrindavan. Therefore, I in advance gave myself to them as their son, and they're satisfied with this. You know, in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, all the elder gopis of Vrindavan had a chance to have Krishna as their son. And all the cows had a chance to have Krishna as their child, their calf. So Krishna is saying, look, I already knew about their extraordinary devotion. So in advance, I arranged to give myself as their son. And they're satisfied. In other words, Brahma, just leave it at that. So what was Brahma's response? Well, I know everything you say is proper, but... this Vaishnava talk, you first, you know, offer proper prayers and offer proper praises. It's a good way of doing things in Vaishnava interactions. I know everything you say is proper. It's just that... So Brahma presented himself in that way. I know everything you say is proper, but remember, Putana got the benediction of being a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan, remember? In other words, she gets to treat you as her son. So how can you say that the Brijbasis who loved you, they got something special or distinctive when Putana, just by disguising herself as a devotee, she got the same thing. So here we are back to square one again. You say, in reciprocation to the Brijbasis' extraordinary devotion, you gave yourself to them as your son, as their son. But that's the same thing you gave to Putana. So how is it special? How did Brahma resolve this? In the end, Brahma just concluded, here's the situation. You are eternally indebted to the Brijbasis. That's how the situation resolved. In other words, Krishna's being indebted to his devotees is a characteristic of Prem. Now, we might say, to be indebted to someone, that's a very weak position. You don't want to get in that position of being indebted. But in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's being indebted to his devotees. That's a supreme characteristic of love of Godhead. So that's how the issue was resolved. Because Krishna gave himself to the Brijbasis as their son, but then he also gave himself to Putana. She took position as mother in Vrindavan, equal to a mother in Vrindavan. She became a nurse, as Uddhava exclaims in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Ahoyam Bhakti Stalakalakuta. Uddhava is saying, how glorious is this? How amazing is this? So it seems everything is equal. Krishna gives the demons the same thing that he gave the devotees in the case of this special demon, Putana. But then again, you have to go deeper into Prem and understand that Krishna's becoming indebted to his devotees, that is especially exquisite. I've got nothing more to give the Brijbasis, just like he told the gopis. You'll just have to be satisfied with your service. And we might say, just be satisfied by devotional service. Krishna, give some material benedictions. Give some powers. I mean, just be satisfied with your service. Even in our ordinary daily dealings, if you go to the temple president and you have some problem, he says, well, a major part of your solution is that you should be satisfied with your service. Wait a minute. This is retro stuff. Dinosaur. But that is the way Vrindavan works. Krishna doesn't mind becoming under the control of his dearest devotees. Okay, I'll be indebted to them. He told the gopis that also. I can't pay my debt to you. This is love. In other words, I'm your puppet. I'm under your control. To understand this, we have to have out of our mind any hope for material benedictions, any hope for receiving material opulence, fulfillment of material desires in exchange for devotional service. And Prahlad Maharaj, by his activities in relation to Hiranyakashipu and Lord Nrisingadev, by our hearing about Prahlad's activities, we become cleansed of the desire to offer devotional service in exchange for material fulfillment. By hearing about Prahlad, those unwanted and illegal tendencies in us become cleansed, and then we can better appreciate how monumental it is, how inconceivable it is that Krishna becomes the property of his devotees. So that's what Brahma is getting at. You can't give anything more than yourself, but you've given yourself to Putana. What's left for the Brijbasis? Okay, you're indebted to them. That is the ecstasy of Krishna praying. Any questions? Hare Krishna. Yes.
Hi, Balmaraj. Your points are well taken about Brahma's conversation with Krishna, but it seems that it's a little disingenuous because they all know that these demons are originally from the spiritual world. It's not like there's a demon loka that they came from and now they're being promoted. I mean, they're going back to their original position. It seems that it's a little bit, you know, especially we know in this case, Jai and Vijay, they directly fell from Vaikuntha and they're going back to their position. And same is true for all of us. We all came originally from a position in the spiritual world. So no matter what happens in the material world, ultimately we're going back to that. But so why is it so difficult? It's not like Krishna's, you know, taking somebody from, you know, some came from an eternal hellish situation and putting them back. He's putting them back in the original position.
Still, regardless of that point, these demons were inimical. They hated Krishna. And so we pay attention to bhava. There's all different types of bhava, states of absorption. There's asarika bhava, the bhava of being a demon. There's maitini bhava, the bhava of male-female attraction. So bhava is very important in Bhagavatam. Emotional states are very important. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is taking note that these demons were totally wrapped up in hatred of Krishna. That was their bhava. And now they're rewarded. These most intense demons are rewarded with these positions in the spiritual world. What's going on? So it's all about the focus on bhava. Yes.
Haribo Maharaj. I was curious, in many of places in Prabhupada's books you see 24/7, constantly think of Krishna. But I have to admit, I'm a part-time devotee. Sometimes I'm thinking of Krishna, and sometimes I'm thinking of Homer Simpson or something. But the point is, what do you suggest for a part-time devotee? Serious.
Bhagavatam is presenting what is the perfection of love, to always think of someone. Now, even in material existence, you see glimmers of what it's like for someone to be absorbed in thinking of something, whether it's the opposite sex or money. You can see the mind has a potency to get wrapped up amazingly in things. So the Bhagavatam is aware of that potency of the mind. That same potency of the mind to get absorbed in material life will work wonderfully when it's absorbed in spiritual life. This is what Krishna means in Bhagavad Gita when he says, the mind can be your greatest enemy or your best friend. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that the purified mind can be a wonderful instrument for taking you back to Godhead. So he's pointing out the potency. But it's hard for us to see the potency of that mind thinking about Krishna because our mind is powerfully absorbed in material life. So the whole process of bhakti is to take that potency of the mind, take it from material absorption into thinking of Krishna. So if you want to really appreciate the power of the mind and how it's possible, what the possibilities are in terms of thinking of Krishna, see the power of the mind in material life. That mind is so powerful in material life that it drives us from body to body and perpetuates material existence. So therefore, Prabhupada is just stating the facts. Hey, you've already got a powerful mind. Here's what to do with it. Otherwise, this is what's going to happen because of your mind. He's just pointing out the facts. So you can't deny the power of your mind. It's doing things. It's taking you places. Whether you are practicing bhakti or not, your mind is acting. And there'll be results. So why not train yourself to always think of Krishna? One last point. It's very interesting. Sanatana Goswami explains that Prahlad Maharaj didn't want to go back to Godhead in that he didn't mind spending birth after birth in the material world perfecting his bhakti. A real devotee always feels himself, herself, to be unqualified to go back to Godhead. You just want devotional service. So if we think about things in that way, let me just look for the service. Let me look for a chance to engage my senses in Krishna's service. Gradually your mind will be taken care of. But if we think about our mind separate from devotional service, oh my God, it's wild. So our only hope is to engage the mind in devotional service, thinking about how to serve Krishna. Yes.
Marge, thank you for a very nice class. In the purport, there's something I'm wondering if you could elucidate a little bit for me. I'll just repeat it. Srila Prabhupada says that the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading all over the world with two aims: to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to kill all the pretenders who falsely present themselves as avatars. And then he says the preachers of this Krishna consciousness movement must carry this conviction very carefully within the hearts and kill the demons who in many tactful ways vilify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And then he says it'll be easier if we take shelter from Shingadev and Prahlad Maharaj. But I'm wondering, there's no, he doesn't really qualify what he's saying. Can this be taken also as an opportunity for Kshatriyas to act in such a way as to, perhaps under a Krishna conscious government, take out certain demoniac elements, other than just, like we know, being purified by simply, the holy name of the Lord?
I was afraid someone was going to ask me this question. First of all, you kill demons by destroying their philosophy as one way. And because we're followers of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, we follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, who killed the demons by destroying their demoniac mentality. Then again, these books are meant for thousands of years into the future. So there are things, there are instructions in Prabhupada's books for Krishna-conscious rulers, Krishna-conscious leaders. You know the example of Pritchard Maharaj when he saw someone beating a cow. So that is there in Bhagavatam. But we have to be a little tactful in our presentation. In other words, we don't act in a way that will risk the preaching of Krishna consciousness. That's the number one priority. So therefore, we focus on killing the demoniac mentality. If and when there is a Krishna conscious government that can actually be just and act on principles of Bhagavad Dharma, that's another thing. But right now, we're spreading Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. Still, there are things in Prabhupada's books that are actually meant to guide Krishna-conscious governmental leaders. What about the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur? What's the name of that mystic yogi? Yeah. He knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur was coming after him as a government officer. Bhaktivinoda Thakur took it as the duty of the government to chastise this imposter who was having so-called rasa lila with wives of gentlemen. So the mystic yogi knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur was coming. And so as soon as Bhaktivinoda Thakur arrived, this mystic yogi said, well, why are you interfering? Name what you want. You want to be the king of Orissa? I'll make you the wealthiest person in Orissa. Say what you want. And of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't want anything from him. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's whole family was put in jeopardy by the mystic power of the demon because Bhaktivinoda Thakur put him in jail for pretending to be something you're not. And the way Prabhupada tells the story, when the whole family of Bhaktivinoda Thakur became deathly ill with fever, once they put the mystic yogi in jail, that mystic yogi was retaliating by cursing Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family with illness. So the whole family is boiling with fever. And so the wife, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, comes and begs him, please let him out of jail. We're all suffering so much. And her husband, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, told her, we can all die, but he's staying in jail. That's how Prabhupada tells the story. There's a wonderful example of Krishna conscious grihastha life, the Paramahansa example. My point, though, is Bhaktivinoda Thakur took it as the government's duty to deal with, to chastise this pretender. So that was in the, what, beginning of the 20th century or end of the 19th century? Not too long ago. Well, of course, we have to be strategic and understand that right now we're just in the beginning phases of spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement. So first we need to educate people, distribute books, raise people up in Krishna consciousness, and then one day there may be a Krishna conscious government, which would have to be concerned with persons who say they're God and take action. Just like a government takes action against, well, they don't take action against Wall Street fraud, but they but they take action against some things. So Prabhupada is simply saying, since the government takes action, why don't you take action against this? But we have an kind of an inner hesitation about that. Ooh, is this the Taliban or something? Ooh. It requires some deeper understanding. And remember what we were discussing about the first program at Stanford. There's sometimes misunderstandings. They were yelling at Prabhupada, Nazi, fascist. And he was just explaining the way karma works. Your government is ordering you to go to Vietnam. Then the blame goes to the government, not to you. But because you elect your government, that's very deep subject matter, and there's bound to be misunderstanding, even when the founder Acharya is presenting something. Second kirtan, whole hall emptied out, no one chanted. They're all gone. They didn't want to hear. How's the first program at Stanford? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.